From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour, this Veterans Day, was made in 2001 when NATO arrived in Afghanistan. A young boy, then just 10 years old, celebrated. And now, as an adult, he says it was a liberation for most people. There was television again, jeans and t-shirts like in the 1920s and 1980s before the Taliban attacked the country, he told a German newspaper in 2016. The boy, Hanif Frotan, was allowed to go back to school. Just 9 years later, as he began to pursue a journalism degree in Kabul, Frotan got a job offer from the American Armed Forces. He says he took it, feeling obliged to help the liberators build a new Afghanistan. He served alongside U.S. troops as an interpreter for 2.5 years. It was dangerous. He lost friends to mines and by fire from snipers. He saw horrific things that most of us would not be able to comprehend. After his service, Frotan continued to face danger, death threats from the Taliban. He knew that to survive, he needed to leave. He fled to Germany at great personal risk, climbing through mountains for 21 hours in extreme weather. After 5 years in Germany, he was finally granted a special immigrant visa to come to the United States. Hanif arrived in Rochester on September 23rd. And on this Veterans Day, we hear Hanif's remarkable story and sacrifice. He is one of three Afghan natives joining us today. They all served alongside U.S. troops in Afghanistan as interpreters. This hour, we share their experiences and what they want the community and the world to know about the challenges that they have faced. An honor to always hear these stories. Really appreciate every chance we get with them. Let me welcome our guest now. The director of the organization that is behind some of these efforts to bring them here, the organization called Keeping Our Promise, and the director is Ellen Smith, who's back with us. Ellen, nice to have you. How are you? Hold on, let me make sure I can hear you, Ellen. Are you there? Let's see if we can reconnect with Ellen, because I'm not hearing Ellen, but let me welcome the other guests. Hanif Frotan is with us. Hi, Hanif, Afghan native who served alongside U.S. troops. Hanif, thank you for being with us. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm fine, thank you.
Also welcome to Tamim Azizi, who's an Afghan native who served alongside U.S. troops. Tamim, welcome. How are you?
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me. How about yourself?
Well, very good. It's an honor to have you. And hello to Sami Skander, who is also an Afghanistan native who served alongside U.S. troops. Sami, welcome to you. Let me try if we can see if we can get Ellen back in here. Ellen, are you with us? No? Okay, so let's go ahead and see if we can reignite that. And in the meantime, let me bring in Hanif, who I told your story at the outset, Hanif, but if you could take me back to 2001, tell me what life had been like for you in your first 9 years of life and what you remember maybe leading up to 2001 versus what happened then in 2001.
Well, I was really, a small kid in that time, but I remember something. I mean, my father was on opposite side and fight against Taliban, but my mother and my rest family were in Kabul. And in Kabul, there was a Taliban government. I mean, they require all the kids to come in a school and take some only Islamic and Arabic classes. I mean, and to wear imama, if you like a turban. And it was really difficult for my mother to go out without some person, I mean, my father or something. And there was a Sharia law in Kabul, and very difficult. So what I can remember, it's like it was really hard time. And
Hanif, can I ask you a little bit about Sharia law? Because in this country, the extent that we understand of Sharia law just comes from occasional debates about trying to help countries that are living under Sharia law. So I think many Americans, probably myself included, aren't exactly sure what that means. So let me ask you, just how strict, how severe is Sharia law? How severe was it?
Haggana just explain, I mean, probably a lot of Americans watch a video from Iraq today, like via the ISIS, or, I mean, there's a lot of rules. I mean, the women are not allowed to go out of house without their husband or brother. I mean, they have to wear burqa everywhere. And you have to, you will require to pray five times. You know, it's like really tyrannish. If you just not keep the rules, they're going to just punish you. I mean, you can go in jail, you can, it's really difficult. I mean, to explain the Sharia law, how difficult it is, but I remember it was not easy. So.
Yeah, and I think you're bringing up the answer to the question I was going to follow with, which is when you say that you must pray under Sharia law five times a day, that there are certain rules on what clothing you must wear, who can go where. It sounds to me, Hanif, like if you didn't do those things, if you did not do those things, there was real penalty. It wasn't just sort of rules that were not enforced, that you could actually go to jail, yes?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was part of that. But on that time, it was like same in Iraq, in Mosul, probably saw last year news from Mosul. It was Kabul like that. I mean, I can't say and confirm it was like that because there was violence against women. I mean, there was violence against people. And it was really difficult with those laws which Taliban wanted.
So, Hanif, in 2001 then, NATO arrives in Afghanistan. And I don't want to oversimplify things and say that things immediately were easy or changed, but it does sound like there was a significant change pretty quickly. What did you see changing? How fast did things change in 2001?
I remember the time which North Aliyatin and American getting in Kabul. The first thing, I was happy that I'm going to school in some different atmosphere. It was like first time I had a woman as a teacher. It was for me like something really, really amazing, a kind woman as a teacher. And I didn't know before that if we have sometime a woman teacher. And I was allowed to wear a jeans for first time. And I was allowed to take some science classes, mathematics, and so it was not allowed during the Taliban government to have English class or science, math. And it was the changes that I saw. And I saw a lot of girls also going to school. I mean, it was the changes that happened really one day, in 1 or 2 days. So
wow.
That I saw. The old woman's teacher come back to a school on their job. And so it was really some different world for us.
How happy were you and how to see girls going to school, and how happy were the girls that you knew to go to school, Hanif?
I remember from my family, my sister, she was really happy to go back in school, like free. There's no rule to stop her. And also the other kids, the neighbors, I mean, I remember how they happy were. And so it was like a historical day in all Kabul. So.
Wow. Well, that's when you were, you know, just a young boy, 10 years old or so. And then, you know, you become an adult, you're pursuing a journalism degree in Kabul. As much as in 2001, Hanif, you saw the change happening quickly, can you give me a sense for what life was like in that next 10 years from 2001 till about 2010 or so when you were becoming an adult? I mean, I don't want to paint a picture that life immediately became easy or free from worry or threat. What was it like in those next 10 years?
The next 10 years, there was, there was a lot of changes, a lot of girls went in university, the woman came on politics, and the economy of people just changed, and there was a free television and media, freedom of speech. But same time, we had a other side of society, which it was a lot, which there was a lot of problem. I mean, I experienced a bipolar society in 10 years or until now. So there was a good things and there was also bad things or still, you know.
Sure. And then tell us about when you started to work alongside U.S. service members. How did that happen?
Yeah, the operation of U.S. Mission Afghanistan was the name was Operation for Enduring Freedom. So I thought as a young Afghan, the troops are coming really from long way to help us, and they need some local people to translate for them and join with them to free the country from terrorists and Taliban. My English was good enough to help troops, and I decided to join. And same time, it was a job for me. So.
Okay. How dangerous did that make life for you, not just at the time, but in the years since then, Hanif?
I mean, it was like I went there because help troops and make the situation better, but unfortunately, it didn't happen soon. The situation was still worse, and it was like when I came back to home and I saw there is no respect in society because I joined with military and I worked for U.S. Army and I got threat from Taliban and it was not safe anymore for us because still there was the Taliban were strong and they are strong and the security problem in Afghanistan was continuing and it was not really safe anymore for us because of working for U.S. forces.
What has been the process then before that has brought you here? Tell us about how that's happened.
It was, when I left job, I was in Kabul and it was really difficult. I have to just cover myself and sometimes have a secret life. And it was really not easy to say loud for everyone, I work for U.S. Army. It was just stress for your life. And a lot of Afghans interpreter lost their life. The process was not easy. I applied in 2013 for SIV. And that time I got denial letter because of missed documents. So I didn't have any contact with my commander. And the other problem was a company, they say we don't accept this company HR letter because they are not direct contractor, they are subcontractor. So because of missed documents, I got a denial, and I didn't know what should I do. It was really, really sad, because I feel myself that U.S. government just want to leave me behind. So, and I support him in bad times, and now because of bureaucracy, I'm not allowed to continue my visa process. And the situation got worse, and I just decided to leave Afghanistan. I left Afghanistan in 2015. It was completely illegally, without any passport or visa. Just we crossed the border to Pakistan, then Iran, and then from Iran to Turkey, from Turkey to Greek, from Greek to Balkan route, and mainly in Germany. But I visit an American tourist in Greek. He was there for sightseeing, and I just talked to him. He was making a photo of refugee boats. I hear my story. We change our email address and Facebook, and he say, as an American citizen, he tried to help me. When I arrived in Germany, we just chat with each other, and he fight for my SIV for 5 years. So,
incredible.
Without helping of my American citizen friend, it was not possible to come here.
Hanif, you speak so calmly about circumstances that most of us will never have any clue what they feel like. And I want to stress a couple of points for listeners who might be just joining us. I mean, Hanif Rotan is an Afghanistan native who served alongside United States troops as an interpreter. His life was threatened. My understanding is the Taliban tried to kill you on multiple occasions. You've been shot at. You had to hide under a fruit truck to make it across the border with Pakistan. All of that is true. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's all correct. It was not easy crossing border illegally. It was dangerous in Afghanistan. It was dangerous in Pakistan and Iran. And I spent even 35-day jail prison in Turkey because of getting illegally in Turkey. So, and it takes 3 months to arrive in Germany from Afghanistan.
I guess I just hear the story, and you are so calm in how you tell it, and maybe you become used to the danger. But can you describe for listeners what it's like when there are agents of your own country, of the Taliban, trying to kill you? What it's like to have to hide under a fruit truck to try to make it across a border so you're not found and killed? I mean, do you remember the emotion of that? Are you able to suppress that emotion and stay calm in those moments?
Yeah, I tried. It was really a choice to leave Afghanistan, to go out from Afghanistan, or the Taliban will find you and kill you. So my family say you have to leave that, and I was also agree with that. And there was no way to come legally out from Afghanistan. Only way it was illegally to cross border. It was first time not really easy to cross from Kabul to Bardar city, which is close to Pakistan and Iran, because the highway was not safe, and that's why. So a smuggler tried to put me in fruit tracks, and after that crossing the border from Afghanistan to Pakistan with walking, and also from Pakistan to Iran with walking. And even it was really difficult. I mean, I experienced 5-hour drive, 14 person in a car, you know, like there is no space for you, really, like 14 person wow. in a Peugeot car, 4 and 5 hours drive, and a small car, 14 person, which is normally for 4 person. And also a lot of difficulties. It was really not easy. There was a risk of shutting Iran border army against refugees. There was a risk of a lot of risk. So, and then when we arrived in Tabriz, which is close to Turkey, Tabriz is an Iranian city. There was a next mission to come out from Iran, and there was a mountain, and we have to walk 18 hours with other refugee groups to cross Iran to Turkey. When we arrived in Turkey, we were arrested from Turkish border police.
Well, all of those things on your journey to the United States, you survived them. You are here in Rochester. Can you give me a sense for what life has been like for you here, Hanif?
It's really something different. I mean, the process of visa, it was not easy. I got... I have to just wait long time for entering in the United States. When I arrived here, keep our promise. So they just welcomed me in the airport, and I thought, so it's different America. So you are not in a some American administrative, like waiting for your visa, and you are here to see really local people, how nice they are and how friendly they are and how they are making a good job. And that was like a good feeling, and I thought, so I'm somewhere that I can make my home. So...
Yeah. Hanif, are you getting used to the idea that at least in your daily life here, you don't have to look over your shoulder? You're not threatened every day. You're not in danger every day. Is that a change of mindset for you?
Yes, sure. I mean, I'm feeling so I'm free, and nobody will look at me. But still, I'm thinking about my family in Afghanistan, which is sometimes really difficult because I lost my brother in 2016 and other friends. So I feel myself really safe here, but still, like other Afghans that they are living here, they have a concern of their family life in Afghanistan. Like
yeah.
Their own brothers. So.
Well, I'm going to turn to some of your colleagues in a moment. I just hope that you feel love and security here, Hanif. I hope you feel appreciated. And I truly hope the American people understand the sacrifices that you and your family have made just to survive. I hope there is a long and better future for you here. Can you just give us a brief sense for what you hope to be in your own future here?
Yes. First, I want to just say something, a message for American citizens. I want to say for American citizens, so Afghan and Iraqi SIV program needed American citizen support. Without American citizen support, it was not really easy to come here. And a lot of people are waiting for your support. There's a lot of bureaucracy. There's a lot of problem in this process. Please support SIV guys. They need support, and your support can change. So, the last thing which I want to say is, so I'm happy. I have a first job. I had my first job interview here, and I always thought first job here, and I want to just work on my English and go back to college, so make some computer degree.
Thank you for what you have done, Hanif. I'm grateful, and I know our listeners are. Thank you. And I want to bring in Ellen Smith, the director of Keeping Our Promise, who introduces us to people like Hanif. And Ellen, first of all, thanks for making the time. How are you?
I'm great, considering we're in a pandemic. But thank you, Evan, for having us on. It's always a pleasure, and we like to get these stories out so people do understand the sacrifices that the Afghan and Iraqi people have made in, you know, this war against the Taliban and ISIL.
I'm going to observe something about Hanif, Ellen, that is not meant to be a joke. I actually found this, I take this very seriously, but I found this interesting. He hid under a fruit truck in one case to make it across the border into Pakistan safely. His nickname was Fruity, not because of the circumstances that in which he's survived, but because the translation of Fruity is linguistically gifted. And he was truly gifted for what he did for U.S. service members. How do you view his service?
You know, these guys have all served honorably, and that's how they qualify for their visas, which take far too long. These visas are supposed to take 9 months under law. That's a congressional mandate. There's been a lawsuit involving the International Refugee Assistance Project on behalf of the SIVs. That lawsuit was settled with the Trump administration back in March, I guess. And the Trump administration agreed that they would go back to these nine-month timelines. There was a report in June, and they're still not adhering to the legally mandated nine-month timelines. If we had had those timelines, people like Hanif would not have to risk his life getting out of his country where his life was at risk. It's really an insane process, and we certainly hope that this process will change and that the staff will be hired by the State Department to speed this process up. We have lost five interpreters that myself and our team here in Rochester have worked with on trying to help them get their visas, and it really is a life and death situation for these guys. And Hanif's story is why we need to do this far more quickly than it's being done now.
Ellen, you're in Rochester. How do you keep track of who needs to, you know, needs assistance? How do you sort of keep in touch, especially when there are interpreters whose lives are under threat and they may have to sort of go dark to try to stay off the grid and not tracked? I mean, how are you doing that?
So we have a Facebook group called Association of Wartime Allies. And we created that because we were getting just so many questions and hits on our Keeping Our Promise Facebook page, and we couldn't help everyone. So we devised a system where we have five volunteers, including myself, who monitor that page. And we have probably about 5,000 page members. It's a quote-unquote private page. We screen the people before we allow them on the page. And on that page, they are permitted to ask questions. They can show, like, if they got rejected by the United States for their visa, they can cross out their names and take a picture and show their rejection letter. So we can say, okay, well, it says that you didn't have a contract number, so let's go find your contract number, meaning, you know, somebody was a contractor for DynCorp or Raytheon. Well, these guys don't have the contract number. I mean, it's sort of an insane process. So we will do these things. And another thing is sometimes they need to update their HR letters. This is a new process under the Trump administration. So if an HR letter or a letter of recommendation is over 2 years old, it must be updated. So they're getting rejected for that. So we will help them if they need to find the U.S. citizen who wrote their first letter and they're no longer in the military. We will try to track those people down so they can get their updated letter. And it's really just a lot of, you know, gumshoe work.
Are things going to be any different for you under a Biden administration?
We're supposed to allow 4,000 of these visa holders in each year. And this has not happened under the Trump administration, although it's been planned for. And I mean, the Biden administration has said that they're committed to helping our SIVs, our wartime allies. So, I'm just going to hold them, hold their feet to the fire, like we have done with the Trump administration and under the Obama administration as well. I mean, there were problems under the previous administration.
Sure.
They did get worse under the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. But, I view that as part of my job is public awareness so people know what's going on.
Yeah, and advocacy. Before, I take our only break, and we're going to hear two more stories after our break. I want to take an email from Herman in Brighton, who just has a question for Hanif about his views on what's happening now. So let me just ask you, from Herman. Herman says, what is your opinion of the current negotiations with the Taliban? Can it lead to peace? What do you expect is likely to happen if U.S. troops pull out of Afghanistan entirely? Are the Taliban likely to take power? Could conditions return to the way they were before 2001? Would strict Sharia law be reimposed? What could happen to women's rights? So there's a lot there, Hanif. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, thanks for your question. Really, I'm feeling nowadays like I'm really concerned what happened with this negotiation. Not only Afghans, Americans, Europeans lost their life to guarantee women rights and human rights in Afghanistan, not Taliban government. But now is something going on there which I'm not total agree, because I was involved on that mission, and there are a lot of American families, a lot of Afghan families. They should ask from this administration, so why they're dealing with devils. So Taliban, you can't trust on Taliban, and they just show last days. They just keep. They are keeping fighting. They don't want to. They don't want to stop violence. They don't believe for women's rights. They don't believe in democracy. They don't believe in freedom. So, I'm really unhappy from this negotiation, and I'm not really hopeful. If this negotiation changed, I think there's needed some other policy to use against Taliban, not giving them a right. I mean, not know them as a political party. They are terrorists, and they don't believe at all in democracy or peace or women rights in Afghanistan. This negotiation is, I'm not agree with that, and I'm asking from U.S. administrative. And the families are also asking why we are negotiating Taliban. We fight with them. And so I'm not really agree. As an Afghan, I'm going to say it was like this negotiation, I think, was a election campaign in the United States. And there's also no result. So.
Let's take our only break of the hour, and we're going to welcome a couple of more of essentially Hanif's colleagues who are Afghan natives who served alongside United States troops. And on this Veterans Day, we're learning about not only the mission of keeping our promise, but the service that these men provided for United States service members in Afghanistan, putting their own lives at risk. And what happens to them next, that's part of their story. Let's come right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, when's the last time you saw a live concert, a band on stage? Most Americans, most people around the world would say, before the pandemic. It's been a rough year for fans of live music, and it's been a really rough year for performers who need that live connection to their fans. So WXXI and The Little are doing something about that. A series of recordings at The Little Theater, and you're going to hear some of the music and meet the performers next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Ellen Smith, the director of Keeping Our Promise. We're going to welcome in a couple of other voices here. And as I do that, you want to tell me a little bit about Tamim Azizi first, a little bit about that relationship you have there, Ellen.
Tamim, again, contacted us by Facebook. He was looking for a city to resettle in the United States. And our answer is always yes. How can we help you? Always. We will not turn down a family for resettlement in Rochester. I think it's a great welcoming community, and we've developed a really unique resettlement program here that's not available anywhere else in the United States.
And how long has Tamim been here?
A little over a year. Is it a year? I'm losing track of time. I'm not sitting in front of my computer.
That's okay.
He's done well. He's gone to Oasis. He's working full time now. He's got his car through our Wheels for Work program, which is one of the things we do. These guys donate or volunteer 50 hours back to the community in order to get a car so they can get to work. So Tamim has graduated from our program at this point.
Tamim, first of all, thank you for your service, and tell us a little bit about how you ended up getting to work with the United States Armed Forces. I believe it was in Helmand Province in Afghanistan, starting in 2009. Is that right?
Hello again, Mr. Dawson. Yes, that's absolutely right. It was back in 2006 or 5, I would say. I was 14, 15 years old when I was studying English. I had just started studying English. So one day I see the American forces patrol by my house. So, you know, typical Afghan kids, they go ahead and start a conversation with the soldiers. So that's what I did. Went there, they offered me a bottle of water, you know, and I actually started talking with them. So they heard my English and they were like, like, you're good for being an interpreter. So that's when I had that word in my mind. And as soon as I graduated my high school and the need that there was for the interpreters to be there in the field with the armed forces, U.S. armed forces, so... as soon as I graduated my high school, I started working with United States Marines and the southern province of Helmand. Yes, that's true.
What was that experience like for you?
I would make it very simple. Like most of the things that I had watched on Hollywood movies, I actually saw those things in real. So, like a very big I would say something that I had never seen before. But, yeah, of course, you know, it was very difficult at first for me. But then you get used to the situation. And like a good experience, I would say.
What was the process like for you to end up with a special immigrant visa? And how significant did you find the threat maybe to your life? Were you worried for your life?
Yes. At first, when I started working with the U.S. United States Armed Forces, the SIV program had not started, or maybe I didn't know. I just went there because, you know, I wanted to help the forces, be there with them. I continued working, and also despite the armed forces, I worked for the United States government, like subcontractors. Things changed, situations changed, you know, like at first you could openly tell to friends or whoever that you work for the armed forces, you know, international armed forces, but things started changing soon. You had to keep your secrets, and, I've heard of people, you know, despite them being at home with their family, they got attacked and they were killed because of their service for the U.S. government. Things started changing. It was getting horrible. And then I found out about SIV. Even though it took me like almost 4 years to get here, but I made it here, yes. And at first, like when I got my case in process, I was looking for a place where I can have an easy start. With easy start, I mean like a city where I will not face much difficulties. Luckily, I found Rochester, and in Rochester, I found KOP that made it easier for me.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about why it was potentially easier here, and also, Tamim, tell me really what life was like when you got here. Was it what you sort of had envisioned it would be like?
Well, actually, like back in Afghanistan, before coming to America, of course, we have relatives and family who we always talk with and ask them what state or what place is better to start a life with. So I did not get a green light for other states that I have my friends and relatives there because of, you know, if you are new to a country, you may have financial situations or any situation that will help you have a good start. I did some research myself, looked over the internet, found about Rochester, not that expensive, a friendly community. And plus I found about KOP, Keeping Our Promise, that will be willing to help me and the very primary steps that you need to take in a new country. They will be there helping me out. So that's what made it easier for me. I got here. I had friendly volunteers who are actually still taking care of me in some places and some situations. But yes, they helped me throughout this 1 year of 1 year in Rochester. That's what it made it easier for me.
And now I'm curious to know how day-to-day life is for you now. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, actually. I'm very good. I got my license. With the help of Keeping Our Promise, when we first come here, we don't know about the process, how to apply for license, permit, and everything. So Keeping Our Promise, they've been there. I was able to get my license, and then I found a car. They found me a car. They helped me with the car. And now I have a full-time job. I work at a company where they work, they make hybrid battery parts for automotive, for vehicles. So it's good so far.
And Tamim, last question for you. I mean, obviously, the United States is going through our own election. We have a president-elect. The current president is disputing the results. I suspect that won't amount to much because there's simply no evidence that there's some sort of very well-coordinated, widespread scam to take Donald Trump out of power, but keep Mitch McConnell in the top power. It's very strange. But when you watch what's happening in this country and you hear some Americans very worried about a president who is refusing to give up power, a president who's refusing to honor the results, do you think Americans are overdoing that concern, given that you've actually lived through the kinds of totalitarian and strongman leadership in which people are killed for their beliefs, killed because they step out of line? Or do you think there are serious concerns as you see it in this country?
For a country like America, it is something which shouldn't be there. It's not normal for the United States of America. I mean, in my country, for me, such situations were normal because we always have and had dispute over the election. But for the United States of America, it shouldn't be there. That's what I can tell for now. Even though it's too early for me, but I can tell, all these disputes going on there, it shouldn't be there. And, in my opinion.
Tamim, thank you for your service. I am grateful, and I know our listeners as well. And I am truly humbled to talk to someone like you who has risked so much. And I really wish you the best here. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks for inviting me.
And I want to bring in Sami Skander, who is an Afghan native who also served alongside U.S. troops as an interpreter and just immigrated to Rochester in January of 2020. Sami, how are you? Do we have Sami? Might be on mute. Could be on mute. Let's see if we've got Sami. I'm going to ask Ellen. Can you tell us a little bit about Sami as we try to establish connection there? Hi, Ellen. Go ahead.
Hi. Sami was a contractor for DynCorp, and I think it was DynCorp, and worked on these global IT issues. His specialty is computer science. So, I think that people don't realize how much of the Afghan local population we rely on in Afghanistan to do all kinds of work, not just the combat interpreters. So he was one of our computer guys, and also that put him at risk as well, because he worked for the U.S.
I think he's there. Sammy, how are you? I don't know why we're not hearing. We'll see if we can establish that, because I think our engineer could hear in the booth. So, Ellen, before we bring in Sammy for his story here, let me just get a couple of listener questions for you, Ellen.
Sure.
Benjamin says, as a disabled veteran myself who served around the same time as Hanif, I find it astounding that not much is done to ensure both the individuals who served and their families, allowing them to enter our country in rapid fashion. Please thank them all for their service, and what can we do to help the others and those who are already here, who are here with us now? Ellen, what Benjamin and others are, might be wondering that. How do they help keeping our promise? How do they help folks who are already here, and how do they help with the mission of bringing more here?
So with the mission in bringing more here, we can always use volunteers who are willing to help with our advocacy, our visa advocacy program. And that's something you can do at home. You do not. You just need a computer, and you need to be just a little savvy on using Google and LinkedIn to help find people to get these desperately needed letters of recommendation. The other thing that we do that is unique and is not offered anywhere else in the country is we do offer the families a modest vehicle to get to work. And when I say modest, I mean we are looking for cars that cost $2,300 to $3,000. It's not a lot of money. I just need to get them two jobs so they can work. And we're always looking for creative fundraisers, penny drives, you know, churches help out, the temples help out, the Islamic Center has helped out, because each family really does need a car in Rochester. That's something that we found out. And during this time in the pandemic, it's actually the guys who had cars that did the best, because when they lost their jobs, they picked up work as Grubhub drivers and Uber Eats, and they were able to continue to support themselves and their family because they had a car. And they also supported our community with those services and driving for Amazon Flex. And they've been able to get back to work because they have a car. And then the other thing we do is we provide an apartment, and we need a cosigner for apartments. And we monitor everybody's budget. We know how much they have to survive their first year. In some cases, we subsidize rents for these families for their first year. And so if anyone's willing to be a cosigner, or again, one of the things we fundraise for is the first month's rent, the security deposit on an apartment, their first food. You know, all of these things cost money. And in fact, we have a little fundraiser going on right now with Levantines at 750 Elm Grove Road in Rochester, where they are donating 20% of their restaurant sales for their takeout orders to KOP this week through Sunday to help our program. So there's many ways that people can help, and no fundraising idea is turned down.
Okay, and real briefly, online, where to find Keeping Our Promise, Ellen?
KeepingOurPromise.org is our website.
And it's our own technical issues. Blame the host. Sammy, I'm so sorry. I think we finally got you in our last couple of minutes. It's been our technical issues. Are you there, Sammy?
Yeah. Thanks very much.
Yeah, I'm going to have to bring you back on a different day so we can get the full breadth of your story. I just want to say I'm sorry about that, but I'm down to our last 90 seconds. And just if you could tell the audience, Sammy, how are you doing now that you're here in Rochester? You've been here since January. How are you doing?
Well, I'm but actually from this COVID, not now feeling because for a long time we found job. Just we better from this situation of it.
Yeah, let me just jump in, Sammy. I mean, it's a bad connection. Basically, that whole line, blame it on the host. We'll figure that out again. So Sammy, let me just thank you for your service as well. And I'm sorry we weren't able to establish connection to talk to you, but we're going to do it on a different day. Ellen Smith, in our last few minutes here, a couple of our listeners have asked about KOP caring circles and other ways to get involved. Anything else we missed?
Yeah, caring circles is every family is assigned a caring circle of volunteers that helps them negotiate their first year here in Rochester. And the first 6 weeks is the most intense for a caring circle. We ask them to check in like 3 times a week with a family, make sure that they can get to food shopping. And it's just learning the basics, helping them open up a bank account, helping them with bill pay, showing them what their bills are, how to pay them, how to write a check. I mean, a lot of families, that is not a system that's used in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. So they need to learn how to write checks. And these are things that caring circles do to help each family become independent as quickly as possible.
And Ellen, I've got Fred in Rochester who said, what's a phone number people can call to volunteer or get involved?
They can actually go onto our website. They need to sign up there at keepingourpromise.org, and we will contact you based on their interest.
Okay.
In helping.
Ellen, the hours always fly because the stories are so gripping, but you know how I feel about you and the work that you do. It is Veterans Day, and this is a wonderful way to honor U.S. service members and our allies around the world. Thanks for the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
KeepingOurPromise.org. Sami Skender, Tamim Azizi, Hanif Frotan, all living in Rochester now because of this organization, and hope they all feel home, welcome, and loved here. More connections coming up.